stand by. We are about to begin. Good day, and welcome to the IBM Storage Talk Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager conference call. As a reminder, today's call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to today's moderator, Tricia Zhang. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining today's technical talk on TKLM. Some of you may have been on yesterday's sales level talk on the same subject, and if you did miss it, you can also download it as this call and yesterday's call is being recorded and will be available for replay off of Extreme Leverage and Partner World. If for some reason you do not have today's presentation, you can send Danita Morrison an email, and her email address is dkmorris@us.ibm.com. Once again, D as in dog, K as in king, MORRIS@us.ibm.com. Today, I'm glad to introduce Gordon Arnold. He is the product manager for TKLM and is a senior technical staff member. Gordon's based out of Cary, North Carolina, and he is going to be giving today's technical pitch. We do have quite a host of people standing by to answer questions at the end of today's call, including Krishna Yelpati, who is our lead architect for TKLM, and David Copley, who's the pricing and sales enablement representative. So with that, I'd like to go ahead and turn the call over to Gordon.
Thanks, Tricia. You may have followed that we did a large launch event worldwide with across the company between storage, software group, services, and it was really around the information infrastructure. And so some of these slides come from that launch event, but let me just go right into it. The agenda we'll cover today really is how can you introduce encryption and key management, have better security for your storage infrastructure in a way that's easy to deploy, doesn't introduce complexity from an operations perspective, is compliant with regulations, and really is the kind of easy-to-use, cost-effective increase in security for storage that the industry has been waiting for. Slide 3 says that this is part of a larger set of security assets within Software Group, really around compliance, identity and access management, and what we're going to focus on today is really in the data security. So how can we help increase the security around data, and really in particular the introduction that we've been doing for the last few years in the industry and is continuing on with introducing storage devices that have encryption built into them and really managing the keys for those self-encrypting storage devices. Slide 4 just gives you some of the business background here, and this is a technical presentation, but I'm just going to remind you some of the business drivers because I'll come back on the technical content to reinforce why we satisfy these and why the return on investment case is so good given the technical content we have. So the first that for legal discovery, this is actually quite a low figure, 150,000 to 250,000 U.S. Because of the civil rules of procedure changes, customers are looking for ways of reliably making sure that when data is deleted or expired, that they can just delete the keys and actually not have it be an inventory control problem in order to have a data be deleted. So if a box of tapes shows up that's 5 years old, that somehow got misplaced, that the data that's on those tapes is either readable or unreadable depending upon their retention policies and not just by an accident of inventory control or mismanagement. From an information availability perspective, there's a lot of features in the design of what we did with Tivoli Key Lifecycle Management and our encrypting storage offerings to make sure that customers never lose access to their own data and that they can deploy key management and encrypting storage in a highly available way. Again, in the information retention perspective, we're supporting the deletion of data, but more importantly, this can be part of a larger information retention offering supported by things like our Tivoli Storage Manager and our DR550 offering. And then really the primary driver in the U.S. in particular, but increasingly around the world, is that when data that's on storage media is at risk because tape has been lost or disk drives get replaced, any time that there's a potential breach and that customer data can be compromised, then based upon the early disclosure laws that were done in California, but now they're in 39 states in the U.S. and increasingly around the world with the Privacy Directive in the EU, for instance, you have to disclose to the end customer that you've potentially lost their data, and that ends up being around $200 per compromised record. So if you have a disk drive with a terabyte of information on it, or a tape cartridge with a terabyte of information on it, that can be, you know, millions of dollars of cost, real cost to the company. So that's what's been driving the need for encryption and really has been driving adoption of encryption. Slide 5 just gives a bit more background, a bit more detail on the fact that data loss and the breach of privacy is increasingly a concern around the world. So slide 6 really speaks to the positioning we're taking in the market, which is that encryption should be built into the infrastructure, not as an add-on, and that we've introduced this Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager as a way of transparently detecting when there's encryption-capable media and serving the keys to those devices in a way that's very cost-effective, simple, and not operationally complex. If you look at slide 7, it's really we're trying to introduce encryption but keep the management costs very low, and also enable through our audit logging, for instance, that customers can prove that they're in compliance with various disclosure laws and regulations. For instance, they might need to be able to produce a proof of encryption compliance report, so if they have some storage media that they've lost control of, that they can invoke the safe harbor provisions of the disclosure laws and not have to inform their end customers of the loss of the tape, for instance. The design of TKLM, like EKM, is that the keys are not dynamically generated. We're either using public-private keys to dramatically reduce the number of keys that need to be managed by using them as wrapping keys. For instance, on our TS1120 and TS1130, our high-end enterprise tape offerings, or in the LTO Generation 4 kind of case, we're pre-generating the keys, and with Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager, we're also introducing automation of the rotation of those keys. So a customer can basically install the software fairly quickly, set it up, pre-generate the keys, back it up, and forget about it. And that's a dramatically different statement than what our competition is able to offer. The fact that we're transparently detecting the encryption-capable media, that the storage devices basically auto-registered themselves with Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager, and then that when there's a change of media, when a disk system powers on, or when a tape cartridge is stuck into a drive, then there's a strong security association established between the device and the key manager, and a drive table is created. So when you first install this, you can basically auto-discover all the encryption-capable media, configure all the known devices, and then have keys served to it. The other major difference between what we've been doing and some of the competition is we are not requiring dedicated servers for the key management. We're not requiring some new Linux-based appliance, for instance, but this can run on the most secure and highly available server in a customer's environment, and that's been a very strong selling point for us and a number of our larger customers. And so TKLM really is a follow-on to the very successful EKM offering, but now it's a full product with an easy-to-use GUI and a number of other features that I'll be talking about. Slide 8 really highlights some of the major differences between EKM and TKLM. So let me go through this in quite a bit of detail. First of all the capabilities for key serving that were in EKM are now in the Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager, but it'll also be supporting the forthcoming encrypting disk offerings that we're bringing out both at the end of this year and through the first half of next year. From a lifecycle management perspective, we have automation of the use of the certificates that we use for wrapping keys in the TS-1120 and TS-1130. So you set up what certificates to use, and then you select in a calendar what dates to move from one certificate to the next or roll over from one certificate to the next. And the same feature is also available for LTO Generation 4. So the way LTO Gen 4 works is there's a key label out on the cartridge that's used as an index into a database of keys that are in the Key Lifecycle Manager. And the way we've done this is you set up a group of keys and you pre-generate those keys. That way you're not generating keys on the fly, and it lends itself to better recovery and cloning of instances. But now, with Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager, you can automate the selection of those key groups. So you could, for instance, set up a group of keys for January, February, March, et cetera, and then in the calendar select that on the first day of each month you're going to now use a different group of keys, and this is what you could then use to, and for instance, have a policy that says I'm going to delete the keys at 7 years plus one day, if that's your policy, to make sure that any data that's on that media is no longer readable because the encryption key is no longer available. Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager has a very easy-to-use GUI. It has some great initial setup wizards, so when you first install it, it guides you through creating the key store, setting up the communication security between the devices and the key manager, discovering the encryption-capable devices, and then assigning default keys to those encryption-capable devices, and then last but not least, encouraging you to do a backup. And the backup now is just a single button that you push in order to create a single file. So all this can be done fairly quickly, does not require implementation services anymore, and has an easy-to-use GUI to guide a customer through. So this is a major difference from EKM, which did not have a GUI, with just command line. And then it has a full installer, both on distributed platforms as well as on System Z. So now it's not a matter of downloading and updating the Java Virtual Machine, but there's a simple installer that can be either silently scripted, or you just answer a few questions and it chunks away. And last time I installed this on my 4-year-old laptop, it took under half an hour to install and configure and get up and running. So a major advance as far as ease of use. So slide 9 really speaks to our view of the future, which is that encryption is going to be everywhere, and that we've started with tape and moving to disk, but you'll see us embracing doing key management across the spectrum of places where encryption is going to be done. But when you do encryption, you really have to think about what are the choices and where's the best place to do it. So, for instance, you could do encryption up on a server, but it's, cryptography is computationally intensive. So when you do it up on a server, if you don't have specific hardware, it can often cause tremendous performance problems. Another technical point to make sure that you consider is that when you do encryption, that data is no longer able to be compressed, generally speaking, or subject to deduplication. So if you're doing long-distance replication, for instance, at a storage level, doing the encryption upstream of the storage system may have dramatic negative impacts on the efficiency of what you can do in the storage system and what you can do with replication. Another, you know, security best practice just to keep in mind is with our encryption, for instance, in our disk storage arrays, the ciphertext is not available for inspection. And in particular, you know, with formatting of databases or file systems, there are clear text patterns that would be available. So in general, when data is in transit or on a wire where it could be captured, the best practices would say to use temporary keys, but then to use a different set of keys when you're using long-term retention and where the capturing of the ciphertext is not as easily done. So that's another argument for really doing the encryption down in the storage device. And last but not least, when you do encryption, it introduces some amount of latency in the IOs, which can have a performance problem, and you'd like to be able to have the encryption scale as you're adding more storage. So by embedding the encryption capabilities in the storage hardware, you're able to scale naturally because as you're adding more storage devices, you're adding more encryption capability. For instance, the alternative would be to, for instance, do encryption in the switch, but that's going to be costly and have potential performance problems because you may have a potential bottleneck there in the switch. As you're adding more IOs and you have to do more balancing and configuration to make sure that you're not adversely affecting the performance and bandwidth of the system. And so you'd like to introduce this encryption in the right place and to avoid these problems, and you'd like it to be all with a simple, secure, compliant kind of set of key management. Slide 10, we've learned a lot of lessons over the last couple of years with introducing encryption. A few years ago, or say 3 years ago, the industry thought that one of the best ways of introducing key management was to have the applications actually manage the keys. And that seems simple, but it has exposures and problems from a, for instance, PCI DSS perspective, or separation of duties and access to the key material. So customers would like the custodians of that private key material or the sensitive key material to be the fewest number and not really accessible to a storage manager or a backup administrator. But even more important than that security exposure was that customers wanted to be able to introduce encryption and key management without having to upgrade their applications or go through a cycle of changing their applications or changing their operating systems or reconfiguring all of their systems to now be aware that there was encryption and key management going on. So we introduced this library-managed encryption or systems-managed encryption, which both are implementations of what we call transparently managed encryption. So there's no application changes required. You've got a lot of flexibility on how it's deployed, a lot of flexibility from what kinds of operating systems are supported, how the media is detected. For instance, the library-managed and systems-managed encryptions are compatible with each other, and you can actually mix and match them. And then by using the pre-generation of keys and the way we designed the key wrapping keys in the TS-1120 and TS-1130 case, we greatly reduce the operational complexity, and in the case of the key wrapping keys, you know, essentially took the key management problem of hundreds of thousands of keys and made it tens of keys. The other major lesson that we learned and we've actually implemented from the beginning was that the interfaces between the devices, the encryption cable to the devices and the key manager had to be absolutely rock-solid secure. And so when we shipped our encrypting-capable storage, each storage device has a certificate burnt in at manufacturing, and we can then leverage that to both verify that the device should be able to request keys, but also it generates a strong security association and temporary keys to protect the key material exchange. And so this has permitted customers to centralize their key management onto a few servers rather than distributing the key serving and key management throughout their enterprise, because the security between the storage devices and the key management is absolutely rock solid. And we never have the key material in the clear. So it's not in the clear in system memory. It's never cached anywhere. And it's never kept on a tape library, for instance. So it's only available in, for instance, a hardware security module and the storage device itself, but never in the clear anywhere else. And a lot of the provisions that you look at, if you look at PCI DSS, Section 3.5 and 6, around the security of the key exchange and the security required for key management, really have been met by doing this kind of very secure design of having a certificate in the storage device and a security association to the key manager. Slide 11 is just a review of the different operating systems that we're supporting with TKLM in Release 1. Note that it's a broad level of operating systems that we're supporting. And it gives the customer a choice then of what platform to roll their key management out on. Slide 12 and 13 are really just some screenshots from the System Z side. Actually, the screen real estate on the left of the screen is much simpler on the distributed offering. And I'd encourage you all, this can run on, I have a four-year-old laptop. It doesn't take much space. You could install it on your Windows or Linux-based laptop and play around with it and have fun with this easy-to-use GUI. So back to the agenda slide on 14. How can you introduce this encryption and key management without adversely affecting information availability? So I'm just going to try to hammer home some of the distinguishing features of our offering from a technical perspective. So slide 15, from an information resilience perspective, we have plenty of customers running EKM, and we'll be running TKLM in highly available clusters and also with disaster recovery and site failover. The red books that are available describe this in quite a bit of detail. And some customers actually mix operating systems, so they may be running System Z in production in a Sysplex with GDPS and a site failover, but they might have a copy of the key management running on AIX in order to meet certain recovery time objectives. So that kind of mix and match is possible. The set it up, configure it, back it up, and forget about it is really this, you know, it's very easy to set up and then back up and have fail-safe recovery. You could, for instance, lose a tape library completely and then recover the data with systems managed encryption with device drivers and a laptop. And importantly, we designed the system really to err on the side of data recovery. So, for instance, unlike some of the competition, you can copy the tape media with a library without getting access to the keys, without being able to read the data. And this is important from a service provider perspective, because the service provider may want to verify that the media is still readable and make multiple physical copies to have in multiple physical locations, but you don't want the service provider to actually be able to read your data. Slide 16 speaks to the sort of simple solution. So if you had a small to medium business, they want to introduce encryption, they could install TKLM easily on a Windows workstation, go through the simple steps that I've described, back up the key material to a key fob, put the key fob in a a safe, and they're up and running, and there isn't much else to do. So this is sort of a set it up and forget it kind of model, and it can be that simple. But it can also, on slide 17, really be appropriate for the largest of enterprises. So on System Z, for instance, you could be leveraging the existing hardware, Crypto 2 cards, the hardware cards that are in the System Z for FIPS 140-2 kind of certification for storage of the key material, and leverage the integrated cryptographic services facility. So one of our design points is we can share that key store with other applications, and you can leverage the investment the customers have already made in that existing set of software and hardware on their System Z. That we don't require RACF, but they can leverage RACF to protect access to the key material. So, for instance, if you are sharing that key store with other applications, what additional access controls to that key material do you need to put in place? One of the features we built into DFSMS on the management class in DFSMS is to actually override the default keys that are used for the TS1120 and TS1130. And this is interesting, you know, in the financial services sector, for instance, where you're doing regular data sharing with federal regulators, that you could be selecting a public key of that federal regulator and then doing that data sharing without any secret key distribution. And by organizing the selection of those keys based upon the management class, have that done sort of automatically as a result of the use of the management class. And then unlike some other solutions where you really have to learn a new way of doing high availability and a new way of doing disaster recovery, this very simply fits in with existing high availability features and existing disaster recovery features. Slide 18 just has a little more technical detail on the security association and the device-to-key manager interactions that I spoke about. So let me just make sure that that's clear. The tape device, for instance, or the storage device, has a unique certificate. The amount of the media causes that tape device to generate a pair of keys to protect the key exchange flows, and it signs that pair using the device certificate. Now, within TKLM, or as it says here, within EKM, and it's the same mechanism for both, it validates that signature against the certificate that it's got stored in the key manager and checks to make sure that the device is valid and that the device is a known device that is configured to be allowed to serve keys. So there's a option with EKM or TKLM to either allow devices to auto-register themselves, or they have to be known already, pre-configured in the what we call the drive table. And actually, the way customers end up using this is when they're first installing it and configuring it, they open up the auto registration, so the drive table gets configured, and then once all the drives are known to TKLM, then you would unclick that box and would lock down the security so no unknown devices could come in and auto register themselves or request key material. Slide 19 just reviews the fact that what transparent encryption really means, which is that the application servers here, I've got TSM labeled on the servers, but there could be any application or any backup application, is reading and writing blissfully unaware of the fact that encryption is occurring, and each time the media, new media request, either in a new media or an existing media in order to get retrieve an encryption key out through the side, through the library managed encryption, is making requests to TKLM in order to get the key material. So these could be sitting on the same server, they could be different servers, but there's no requirement for any changes on the servers that are reading and writing the data to be aware of the fact that TKLM is running in the environment and doing the key serving. So slide 20 just basically speaks to the fact that there is a for the LTO4 that there's groups of keys, and that there's a round robin that can occur within the key group. With TKLM, we actually added an option to disable that round robining, and we also added the ability to monitor how many keys are being used in a key set or key group of keys, so that you could monitor how many keys are used. And also, as I said, we've added this automation in order to allow you to automatically select new groups of keys on a regular basis. Slide 21 just illustrates the security association and the wrapping of the keys that I talked about earlier. So, 22, how can you be compliant with regulations and good governance practices for storage infrastructures? Slide 23, just sort of a laundry list of a large number of regulations and compliance features that many organizations are subject to. Slide 24, in particular, we like to focus on the payment card industry data security standard because it's so broadly applicable and drives a lot of the need for encryption and key management and security in general. Slide 25 sort of says there's a lot of aspects to meeting the payment card industry data security standards, and we're going to focus in particular on the data security. And I'd like to move to slide 26 because in here is some detail on the sections of the payment card industry data security standards and what the implications are of that standard on the encryption and key management. So, for instance, the first one here, 3.5.1, restricting keys to the fewest number of custodians necessary. So, again, that's sort of a separation of duties and the fact that you'd like a very few people in an organization to have access to the key material, that you'd like to be able to store it securely in the fewest possible locations and forms. We've been supporting hardware security modules for storage of those keys, but we don't force a customer to buy a particular hardware security module. They have a choice there, but we do support strong security for the storage of the keys. We have provably random number generation for generation of strong keys. I've talked about our secure key distribution capabilities. That's one of our distinguishing features for our solution. The secure key storage, as I said, we've supplied options to customers. The periodic changing of keys, so this really speaks to both the automation that we've done for rotation of certificates or a rollover of groups of keys, but also our enterprise class solutions on our tape allow rekeying without having to rewrite the data. Slide 27, does it have a centralized approach to key management? That permits you to have, you know, the destruction of keys and the management centrally. The split knowledge and establishing dual control of keys, it's often a aspect of the key store and the security on the key store, prevention of unauthorized substitution of keys. So, again, the fact that we have this white list of known devices and the strong authentication before you're allowed to do any key serving helps us meet that requirement. Same for the replacement of known or suspected compromised keys. The fact that we can rotate the keys, the fact that we can minimize the amount of usage of a key by the automated rotation, and the fact that we have good audit log capabilities. So if you did have a compromise of a key, you could know precisely what media is affected by that compromise. So again, on slide 28, for certificates, it's really an automated rollover of the certificate, so you can set up a cycle of what certificates to use for the key wrapping, key kind of operation, And for the symmetric keys for the LTO Generation 4 model, you've got the automated rollover based on time between groups of keys. So again, you could set up a first quarter, second quarter, third quarter per year, and very simply configure as you're setting this up the rotation between those groups of keys. So I'll go back to the agenda, slide 29. How can this help with information retention and efficiency of your services? So for slide 30, from a confidentially maintained information assets perspective, so non-erasable, non-rewritable storage. Remember, we have both storage hardware for WORM, tape, but we also have capabilities within our Tivoli Storage Manager offering and our DR550 for non-erasable, non-rewritable storage. Again, because of the automation features of Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager, you could set up the usage of keys to support the destruction of the key material and the destruction, therefore, of the data on some regular basis. You need cost-effective treatment for this just-in-case kind of data for the long-term retention. So clearly, tape systems are the greenest of the storage systems, and it fits well with this lifecycle management and the kind of retention based upon the erasure of keys kind of model. Also, another feature that's important to remember is that we have an option with our TS 1120 and 30 for actually having the headers on the tapes in the clear, and that's important because if you expect to be able to recover data after a long period of time, having some metadata in the clear helps you know what keys may have been used and how to recover those keys in order to decrypt that data. Slide 31, again, a service provider could have a shared infrastructure of IBM tape equipment, for instance, because the libraries are not maintaining any cached copies of the keys and there's no association between the library and the keys that are used. You could actually let the end customer maintain the keys and then share that equipment between the customers. I already made the point that service providers can make copies of the data but not read the data. And then remember the important features of our TS 1120 and 1130 in that we're using an encryption key storing on the cartridge wrapped with two public keys. And those public keys could be both an internal organization's ability to read but also a regulator or a service provider. So if you needed to do data sharing, you could isolate it using the public key of the partner you're trying to share data with. Slide 32, we've been talking a lot about tape, but remember, one way or the other, disk drives leave a customer's control. So approximately over 90% of the drives that are returned to IBM as being defective still have readable data on them. Storage goes end of life, end of lease. And basically, slide 33 speaks to if you look at disposal options at the end of life, each of them has drawbacks. But the bottom line here is you really don't want to be spending money at the end of life of an asset just to destroy it. And, if you think, okay, well, I'm going to save money by using some professional off-site disposal service, then you're back to the same kind of risk that the disk drives can get lost on the way to the disposal site, and you're still relying upon that disposal service where the data could get leaked and you'd then be subject to disclosure to your end customers. So slide 34 is really the approach that we've done with these self-encrypting drives, primarily sourced from Seagate right now, but you'll see them from other manufacturers. where once you power off the drive, you need to supply an authentication key to unlock the data. So basically, once you power down the storage, it's no longer able to be read without access to the key manager, and it's safe. Your data is safe because it's been powered down. So just to wrap up, because I know we're getting towards the time when I should be opening it up for some questions, slide 36, you've heard me talk a lot about the self-encrypting storage and the key management for that. The reason why we focused on that, it was because it was such a pressing need in our customers. We could also introduce this in a way that was cost-effective and simple. But you'll see us over time expanding out so that we're doing more of an enterprise-wide key management. And it's because, as I said before, we think that encryption is going to be used broadly and that customers will be wanting a centralized and unified approach to managing the keys. So with that, I know I've been speaking very quickly trying to get through all this technical material. Tricia, if we could open it up for questions, if that's appropriate.
Thank you, sir. Our question and answer session today will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the number 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please ensure that your mute function is not enabled so as to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And we will take our first question today from Bruce Wishart. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks. In what time frame do we think we'll be broadening to more than storage devices for key management?
We'll see that this next year. We have partnerships with some third parties. We have, for instance, collaboration going on with the distributed key management system coming out of our crypto competency center in Copenhagen to cover sort of the credit card issuance, smart card, PIN support. So I can't give you specific, roadmap dates right now, but stay tuned. You'll see more announcements in this space.
Thank you.
And we will take our next question from Mr. Jeff Zien. Please go ahead.
Hey, Gordon. Great presentation. A handful of questions. You mentioned on one slide the notification of expired certificates. Is the notification email, or what is the mechanism for the notification?
Actually, the way that's implemented, it's by the same automated rollover. So it's not a notification. It's actually you set up what certificates to use, and it rotates through them.
Okay, so that's just part of the rotation. Good. Now, I think you mentioned on a similar slide, auto-delete. Could you elaborate on that?
So we're not auto-deleting at this point the key material. It's really more the idea that what the best practices some of the customers have used is they set up a cycle to regularly rotate the keys, and then they're going to say just 7 years plus one day as an example, go and delete that key material. But we're not automatically deleting it, and it's mostly because a lot of feedback we get from our customers is that the legal advice they're getting is that they don't know when they can delete stuff because of legal hold kinds or litigation that may be going on. So right now we're not auto-deleting the key material, but customers are preparing for the time when they'll be able to have automatic deletion of the data by deleting the keys by doing this rotation of key material.
Okay, perfect. Next question, page 15, easy escrow of keys. I'm not really familiar with that concept of escrow of keys. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, so the idea is that now you can do this simple backup. You could take that backup file and store it off in a safe.
And that would be the escrow. The backup would be the escrow?
Yeah, so it's not on a live system. It's escrowed off somewhere. And you might have extraordinary people and procedure processes in order to get access to that.
Okay, good. A service provider can copy the media without access to keys. Could you elaborate on that? I don't understand how that would occur.
So our tape systems have the ability to actually read and write the cartridges without getting access to our key material. So you can make a physical copy of the tape. You're just taking and moving the bits from one piece of media to another piece of media. So, for instance, you know, they may have the requirement to make sure that the tapes are physically able to be read, say, once a year, once every 2 years or something. So they have to mount the cartridge, make sure it's still physically readable, and make a physical copy of those bits. So you can do that with our tape offerings.
Okay.
Some of our competition can't do that. You need access to the key material in order to make the copy. And my point was that's not the way service providers need to operate. You want them to be able to make physical copies of the media. But for those service providers, they don't have access to the keys, so they can't actually read the data.
Okay. Good. There's an option to disable round robining for LTO. Why would you ever want to disable round robining?
Some PCI DSS auditors have been construing the standard. I say construing because I don't really think it's supportable, but been construing the standard to say that you need to guarantee there's a unique symmetric key per cartridge. Now, because you know there's no cost to generating keys, you're not charged per key, we would say, gee, you know, generate twice, three times the number of cartridges you have, and you just never reuse a key. But if it's in the middle of the night and you happen not to have monitored that and you're going to run out of keys, we thought the better solution was to do round robin. That way your backup jobs aren't failing, for instance. But some auditors have said to us, well, then that's going to be a security exposure because you have the chance that you could reuse a symmetric key. So we're saying, fine, we'll give you an option to disable that if that's the way you want to operate.
Okay, great. Thanks, Gordon. That was all my questions.
Thanks, Jeff.
As a final reminder, that is star one if you would like to ask a question. And we'll take our next question from Ms. Nancy Roper. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hi there, Gordon. Thanks for the presentation. Supposing an IBMI customer inquires about running TKLM in an IBMI partition, what should we tell him about the availability of that?
We are currently working with our friends in System I in order to get the testing and support we need. It's not going to be supported in our version 1 list. But if you have specific customers that are wanting to run this on System I would certainly appreciate a list of those customers because we've been going to our friends in System I saying we need to qualify, like we did with EKM, TKLM. Can you work with us on providing the testing resources? And so far we've not gotten interest.
I will email you a list.
Great. I mean, I think it's an important platform for us to support. It's just, it's hard to have access to all the equipment and the testing resources, which is why we need some cooperation.
And there are no further questions at this time, Mr. Arnold.
Thank you. Well, on the final slide there is my contact information. If you have other questions or other things come to you that you want to add. Ask, you're more than welcome to drop us a line and I'll do my best to follow up with you.
Will there be anything further today, sir?
Not from my side, unless
This is Tricia. John, once again, thank you for taking the time to dial into this call today. It has been recorded, and we will post it, as well as the call from yesterday, out on Extreme Leverage and Partner World. So if you want to hear, re-listen to the call, or if you have a colleague who might be want to listen to the call, please encourage them to do so. Thanks again.
And that will conclude today's IBM Storage Talk Tivoli Key Lifecycle Manager Conference Call. Thank you all for your participation, and have a great rest of the day.